Just a reminder of a few things from the talk last night. Here we are in a set of current conditions. You're not responsible for the conditions. Just like no one was responsible for the fog this morning. And none of us brought out the sun to drive out the fog. That's a greater set of conditions than we can control or even influence. But we can learn to be content and present in a greater variety of conditions. So as you're settling in to this day and open to what happens, relax your preferences that it go one way or another. Instead, clarify your intention that all through the day, in a great variety of conditions, you'll orient yourself as much as is possible to feeling one breath at a time with a humble, gentle loyalty to find the breath, whether you're tired, restless, you have craving going on in your mind, or you find it particularly easy. And those are the conditions. Don't cling to those conditions. Remember, we are farmers, we are gardeners, we are tending conditions as best we can, but we can't create outcomes. We'll suffer if we try to create an outcome. So the outcomes come as you tend conditions. You can attend your breath. You can attend it with a little more strength of connection. You can sustain that, but you can't sustain it forever, and that's not your fault. But that's at least what you can intend. You can search for an attitude of being content as a basis of your practice. So if your body's a little uncomfortable or strongly uncomfortable, you can see, I can accept these conditions. I can create a baseline that these are the conditions I'm in, and I won't aggravate myself over these conditions. In that attitude, you might relax some. And then from there, you connect to your breath. So we're pulling forward these jhana factors. We're cultivating them like a gardener. But we don't ever gain control over them. We can just invite them and cultivate the possibility for them. If you have more basic contentment through the day will feel less burdensome because you'll have this restful ease, or this orientation towards restful ease. There's also a learning process that the breath actually can be a refuge. It's a refuge from all the places the mind could go and all the fragmentation of all the possibilities of where the mind could go. And rather than being haggard by all those options, you can bring your attention back to something immediate in your body and not made complex by all those possible thoughts. So then the breath becomes a quiet, humble, and grateful refuge from all the ways that the mind has a pattern of scattering, fragmenting, getting lost in thorny dramas. And you can exhale all of that and learn to trust that the breath is a refuge. That helps this be the one frame. The breath eventually becomes the one frame of your attention. And you're oriented towards contentment under the conditions you're in. See if you can every now and then renew your interest. Welcome the factor of piti, this delighted interest. And then, of course, intending your attention is vitakka, sustaining your attention, sitchara. So you can work with this group of five and get to know them, and maybe that's a humble goal for the day, is get to know them when they're present, when they're not so present. Learning how to connect to your breath under challenging times, not make those challenges worse by struggling with them, but start with an acceptance. This is how I am right now. This is how I am right now. This is what's happening right now. And the nice thing in all those conditions, there's at least a simple solution, which is to take what attention you have and offer it to the breath in that moment. Very humble, not some great goal way down the road. It's all resolved in the breath that's happening that moment. If you're swept up by a strong purification, then we have to acknowledge that. If there's a grief going on, if there's a strong anger, a very strong fatigue, rather than seeing that as an impediment to your practice, that's actually the path of your practice in that moment, and regretting it only makes it worse. You could flip the script on it and say, the Buddha said these challenges would come. Lo and behold, I have challenges. Therefore, I am doing the Dharma as he described it. At least in that way, you suffer less. And it actually is helpful. So with that said, rest your body in a way that gives it ease. Take a few breaths and rest not only in your body, but rest in the flow of these current experiences, these current conditions. And for any preferences that make you tense or make you wrestle, and see if you can relax those preferences so that you can find some ease in the way things are right now. And to the degree the mind can find some ease, that will be reflected a little bit in the body, as the body finds some ease. And to the degree the body can find some ease, that will invite the mind to find some ease. As much as is possible in these current conditions. And to help us not be adrift in these conditions, we turn our attention towards what it feels like as you breathe. The breath felt in your torso. The breath in front of your nostrils as it crosses your upper lip. If you're feeling the breath at the lip, at nostrils, from today on, it's helpful not to follow the breath inside your nostrils, but see if you can feel that subtlety of the breath crossing your upper lip, or how it encounters the outside of your nose at your nostrils. Or if you're feeling it in your torso, you might take interest in not the general breath, but you may take interest where you actually feel it. And you relax into that place, return to that place. That becomes your port in all storms, a safe haven from all the conditions we have to experience. There will always be a breath. Slowly it becomes a deep refuge. And how is your breath this morning? Is it a slow, smooth breath? Is it more quick and shallow? Does it have a pause on either the end of the out-breath or the end of the in-breath? Is your breath right now? as an experiment, see if you can apply a little more care without adding struggle or tension. With keeping a sense of contented ease. I'd like to be a little more loyal to the breath. Come in through caring, through patient loyalty. Might not add tension. Might find breath is a little more tangibly connected to might sustain your interest for a little longer. Can't make this happen, but we can invite it patiently. There's pain in your body, and it's making it very difficult to be with your breath or to stay with contentment. It's fine to shift your posture or come to standing. That's supportive of cultivating these jhana factors. Sometimes relaxing and trusting stillness supports the jhana factors. Something you get to explore. How do I support my contentment? How do I support my interest? How do I support connecting and sustaining that connection? Every now and then, let go of everything that's not the breath. Let go of the view that the breath needs something else. some point all minds wander. Don't let that undermine your basis of contented ease, or however much you have access to. Keeping an easeful attitude, just simply begin again. Begin to honor the breath right in the cycle that we find it. I'm going to see if there are any questions out there. It would be great to offer questions first to the people who haven't had a chance to ask in the hall, and also for people who are don't have an interview today. That way we can spread it out a little bit.
So, over the course of my practice, I find myself coming back to, quantum physics experiment dilemma, which is the closer I observe my breath, the more it seems to change with my observation. So ultimately, I understand I'm changing it. I'm manipulating it in some subtle way. And samadhi practice, especially, I find myself caught up in that. Mm. So do you have any advice?
Yeah, so there's probably many ways to kind of work with that, but I'll teach you one way that you can experiment with. Because I do that too, I start with sort of a global awareness of sounds. And what I do with that, I calibrate interest without the need to control, because I can't control sounds. Then I come from that, and usually there's a little bit of contentment and ease just with sounds. Then I bring my attention towards my body. This is sort of the first few minutes of sitting practice. Then I come towards and I acknowledge my body. And upon coming to my body, one thing I've learned to do is just see, can I maintain that sort of open, relaxed interest in the phenomenology of my body? It's sort of like being a botanist but not wanting to change the environment. I'm interested, but I don't want to get in there and start changing it. That's an attitude. So I first find that with sounds, because I can't control them. I come towards my body, I feel my body, and I was like, yeah, I still don't have an agenda other than interest in what's happening. Then I bring my attention towards my breath, and if I've calibrated on sounds, then the body, then the breath, I find there's some time when I can just be that, just take interest in the organic breath. And then at some point I find myself, just my attitude and the observation changes my breath. And usually that means something has crept into my relationship to the breath, that there's an unconscious or conscious desire to have an experience, that I want it to look a certain way, or I'm trying to get somewhere. I no longer have a very open, relaxed agenda with the breath. Something has crept in. And I might look around and can't find it, but I know there's a shift in attitude. And so what I do is I go back out to my body, because often there's so many body sensations I can't control, and I recalibrate. And I say, oh, I couldn't see it when I was watching my breath, but now that I go back to my body, I can see that part of my mind that was starting to come in with an agenda. And now I can relax that now that I see it. But if I can't see it with my body, then I do often come out to sounds. And sounds for me are so spacious and impersonal, and I never have an agenda with them other than somebody stop sniffling next to me. But even that shows me that I have an agenda, that reality is frustrating me. So even that is instructive. And I'm doing that to find that part of my mind that's tense, but I don't see it as tension. It's too familiar. When I come out to sounds, then I relax again, and I see my mind open up. I see this unconscious agenda mind soften, and I come back to my body and come back to my breath, and I'm like, oh, wow, there again. First couple of breaths, not a problem. And then slowly there's a creep in. And it keeps happening. It's like, okay, some part of me is really trying to make an experience happen. So I'm actually going to put the breath in the middle of sounds and body and not make it my exclusive attention, because once I do that, then this agenda gets locked up in it. But then I do a more open samadhi frame where my frame is sounds, body, and breath. And I find when I do the breath in the middle of sounds and body, I'll find myself drawn to the breath because everything else is chaotic. At least there's the breath. And I keep doing that until I find I no longer want to be burdened with an agenda over the breath, that I'm grateful that the breath is the animal body is breathing, and it's inviting me to not be complicated in relationship to it. So in that way, I keep opening up and trying to let go of whatever creeping agenda has gotten me tangled up with the breath. It's actually the same thing when someone's sniffling while it's like, I could be in samadhi if you weren't sniffling. That means you haven't found peace in the conditions you have. There's a tension, and we buy into it, and once we buy into it, we're locking in that tension. But it's actually can expose the fact that I really need to work on my sukha factor. I can't aim and sustain, really, because there isn't actually that much contentment. I'll only be content if something else happens.
So if you're having a purification event and you realize it's a hindrance that's caused you dukkha for a very long time, then what?
Well, first I would change the word if to when. So this is a very deep possibility of a whole change in perspective. Rather than battling something, can we get inside of it and ease ourselves slowly from within the experience? Battling it means you win on one day, you lose on the next, especially a long-term struggle. And you'll always be battling something. And the way that you change that is first to accept it and then find the breath within that experience. So one time a family member died, a young family member, and I was in a lot of grief, and the grief was very painful. And so I kept trying to get my mind out of the grief so I wouldn't suffer, but the grief kept overwhelming me. And so what I learned to do, and it was difficult, definitely, it's not like you should be able to flick this switch, but I learned to be in the grief and let the breath support me in my grief. And that began to transform the grief as something I was journeying through and supported myself with the breath, versus using the breath to get me out of the experience, and I would win one day, lose the next, and I'd eventually be exhausted and then lost every time the grief would come. So if there are two ways of looking, one is through the hindrance and one is through your breath, and you're trying to use the breath to get out of the hindrance, if you actually accept the hindrance and then find your breath inside the hindrance, you use the breath to lower the battle against the hindrance. You use the breath as a resource and a medicine to give you some sustenance while you're in the middle of a hindrance that you can't get out of. And then you stop needing to get out of it because you have your friend, the breath, inside your anger, inside your grief, inside your doubt, inside your fatigue. And it's like having someone throwing you a life preserver when you're out in the ocean on a storm, and there's no refuge, it's all storm, and you're begging for land, but the breath becomes an actual life preserver you can hold on to, even in the middle of that storm. And you're not using that life preserver to battle the storm, you're using that life preserver to give you a reference point and some support while you're in the conditions that are difficult. That sounds like a second-rate prize, because you still are hindered, but that usually shows the attitude that we haven't really accepted the hindrance and the conditions of the hindrance. And when that actually breaks, and it's usually we begrudge it, then we tolerate it, then we accept it, and then we realize, I don't actually have to suffer inside this hindrance. And it's actually the breath that's helping me not suffer, not because it creates a bubble that isn't hindered. It actually is findable in the hindrance, and from that I have some perspective, and I'm not multiplying my suffering by wishing I weren't suffering, but the breath actually helps me when I'm struggling. And then anicca happens, and because you've been inside the hindrance, you have learned something about the hindrance, and you're no longer bereft when hindrances happen, and since they're going to happen, you've now learned how not to suffer when under the conditions of hindrances. And they actually don't seem like hindrances anymore because you found the breath within them and they no longer terrorize you or beat you up. You actually know how to use the tool of the breath in those conditions. We'll take one more. How about down here, Beth? I saw a hand down here earlier.
I just was wondering, because the way I've learned to practice breath meditation is through evaluating the breath and looking for the ease in the breath and then developing the ease. And I didn't know if that sort of conflicted with this idea of just be content with it. It just seems to be a very different approach.
It probably is a different approach. I'm just guessing that you might have learned that through a yogic tradition.
No. Or I learned it through Ajahn Jeff at Wat Metta.
Oh, great. He's in our tradition. So when we're in the realm of samatha, not vipassana, we actually are allowed to learn tools of influence, tools of cultivation. And so we're not going directly for resting in all conditions as they are. We're trying to support development of heart and mind. And it turns out that there are many ways to do that, and many people have found many tools. Eventually, trying to influence the breath, It has an upper limit of what it can deliver. So it's not that it's a bad tool, but eventually many people come to the place where they might intentionally breathe deeper. They might actually use the breath as a tool of transformation. But eventually you can actually just let the breath be natural and find the breath, the natural breath in the natural conditions. And there's the least amount of entangled agenda in that. And so then you get this, you're welcoming a great acceptance in a broad variety of conditions. And so then being with the breath, it doesn't get tangled with a preference, that thing, I could make things a little bit more like this or a little bit more like that. In samatha practice, we open to looking to see if we can improve our conditions, but it's by invitation, but it gets a little sticky because we do have preferences and we can get attached to them. So I would use it as a tool, and you've discovered a tool and you might apply that tool. You also might see if the breath as it is can be fascinating, can be a resource. And the nice thing about ultimately finding the breath as it is that it gets the least entangled with a preference and an agenda. And the breath becomes a wide variety of mysteries that sometimes it's shallow, sometimes it's deep, and there's sort of an honoring of the system, this animal body that's breathing just as it is, and that ends up being enough for the mind to let there be a natural breath. So I wouldn't override the tool that you've learned, and you can use it. And the only thing to watch out for is when we learn a tool that we not get stuck on the preference that the tool can give us. So I have a few announcements to offer. In no particular order, now that we're in the deep part of the retreat, people's senses get very sensitive. Our minds aren't dull and distracted, so the way we open and close doors will have a big impact on people. So it's helpful to be conscious, not to let doors slam as we're going in and out, to move around gently. There's another sense door that gets very sensitive, and it's actually our nose door. And in this heat, one of the things that happens is there's more sweat, there's a little more body odor, and so we actually have to be careful to shower so that we don't invade our neighbor's space with our freedom from showering. I guess I'll leave it at that and let you tend to your own aromas. But please do tend to them. Please come on time for sitting. So about 5 minutes after a sit has started, the room has settled. So if you are up to 5 minutes late, you can come in. But after that, the room settles and your entrance actually agitates the room again. So then you'd sit somewhere else if you couldn't make it within the first 5 minutes of a sit. But please do try to come on the very beginning of a sit. If you have a job or you're working with one of the teachers and you can't come at the beginning, you can sit outside. You can also sit in the upper walking room. There are cushions there if you want. And also, don't leave a sit unless you have to. So it also helps the room be still. And if you have to leave for some reason, everybody will understand that was you just couldn't make it for some reason. But don't casually walk out in the middle of a sit, please. When we ring the bell outside here, that big cylindrical bell, it's good to ring it really loud and with gusto. That's the one sense door we actually want impinged. We want people to hear that sound, so we wouldn't soften that bell strike. We actually want to ring it robustly because people are in the dorms, they're waiting to hear that bell. Some people don't have as good hearing, so please, every bell ringer, please ring that bell with lots of virya, lots of strength. Okay, a couple more. I'm filling the teacup up. But here's a request, not to ask deep Dharma questions by note, because you will engender a sincere desire to respond, but trying to explain the history of karma on little sheets of paper and do it well is a stressful endeavor. So the notes are usually for logistics, small reminders, but be careful of trying to engage too much complexity through notes. This afternoon is an open schedule. We won't have a guided Brahmavihara sit, but we do encourage you to bring loving kindness in to support your practice. We still need a 4:15 practice leader. And there's a sheet out there to sign up, but if we can have one person say, yes, I'll be the one at 4:15 to sit up here and lead the bell. Thank you. And if you'd sign your name up on the sheet, that would be helpful. And then I'm going to get these last names maybe wrong, but Bruce Levin and Phil Laughlin, Your interviews were changed, so you should look at the interview sheet as you leave here to make sure you have the right room, person, and time. Yes?
When you say the afternoon sit,
so both in both sits, we're not going to guide anything those afternoons. Sometimes we guide a loving kindness sit, but some days we're just going to let you have the space to practice and not add another teaching. Yeah. Okay, everybody, have a day. Okay. So some people have noticed that there are scented products being used in our community, and you have to be very careful not to do that because people have allergies and really bad reactions to scented products. So it would be helpful if you all could check again to make sure your shampoos, any soaps you're using, if you're using an antiperspirant, that not be a scented one, and that it's even essential oils or other things that you think are not harmless. When people get strong scents, it actually is hard for their body to take in. So we have a group agreement not to use scented products.
They can get alternatives.
And if you need an alternative to what you've brought, you can get it in the manager's office. We have lots of supplies.